Yeah. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we like to take afternoon discussion from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8. Title of the chapter is Attaining the Supreme. And today's text is text 5. The translation is, and whoever at the end of this life, which his body remembered me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this, there is no doubt. So, I just go to the Sanskrit. Anta kale chamane vansmaram mukva kale varam yaha payati samabhavam yati nastya chasamsaya. Please go to what translation. Anta kale.
Anta kale.
At the end of life.
At the end of life.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Awesome.
Man,
me,
Eva,
Eva,
Saturday,
Smaram,
remembering,
Mukta,
quitting,
Kalevaram,
the body, Yaha,
he who,
Payati,
goes,
Saha,
he.
Matbhavam,
my nature.
Yati,
achieves.
Na,
not.
Asti,
there is.
Antra,
here.
Samsayaha,
no doubt.
I mean, doubt. So, translation again. And whoever, at the end of his life, fits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this, there is no doubt. Please respond to the repeat translation. And whoever, at the end of his life, quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this, there is no doubt. Brief purport, but it's very meaningful. Because this is all that we're struggling to cultivate in Krishna consciousness. The whole things we are doing is set up just on this verse. Everything we are doing in this Krishna consciousness, food for life, big preaching programs, building of temples, speaking big philosophy, and speaking big philosophy even without practicing, this is all set up in this verse. To remember Krishna is our time of death. So let's listen to the proper word. As follows. In this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who is caught on Krishna consciousness is also the purest of the pure. The word smara, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. If one wants to achieve success at the end of his life, the process of remembering Krishna is essential. Therefore, one should constantly, incessantly chant the mantra, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare.
Hare Ram,
Hare Ram, Ram Ram,
Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya has advised that one be as tolerant as a tree. Taro eva sahisuna. Taro eva sahisuna. There may be so many impediments for a person who is chanting Hare Krishna. Nonetheless, tolerating all impediments, one should continue to chant Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So that at the end of one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. Om Jnanam Rajasya Jnanam Jnanam Salakaya Satsun Nirtam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Vichetanya Manobhisam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadahayam Dadati Swapadantika Vandeham Shri Gurum Sita Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Sakshan Shri Rupam Sakajacham Sahagana Raghunacham Vitam Tam Tam Sujiva Sakveta Sarvaduta Parijana Saritam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Sucha Hey Krishna Karma Sindhu Dinam Bandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchan Gurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Vanamani Hari Priya Vanchakapa Tarubhyacha Krimha Sundhubhya Evacha Patishanama Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namo Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Sri Gaura Bhakta Vidya Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangyum Lagayatin Giri Yakriva Tamaham Vande Sri Guru Dinatari. Namo Vishnupadaya Vishnupadaya Bhutale Srinath Bhaktivedanta Swami Tsunami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Sarvani Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Akshaya. So we're happy to be here. Frankly speaking, we're happy to be here. So I remember last time when I was in South Africa, before I went out to West Africa, devotees here were pushing that I can't. And I told them the human that I'm not going to come. And you know why? Who knows the reason why I said I wouldn't come? I said I was not going to come. I think back to what tradition is meaning. And I told them the human that I'm not going to come. But now I can, so it makes some difference. So who can guess the reason why I said I wouldn't come? I permit you to guess. You don't speculate, but you are free to speculate now. Yes, so how you can help us to spend it? Why I said I wouldn't come?
I don't know my life.
Who can help us? Perhaps you. Can you help us to tell us why I said I wouldn't come? No idea. So the men should help us.
You're not enthusiastic enough?
No, you're very far from it. Very far away from it. Alright, so maybe I can just give you an idea. I remember last year when I came to South Africa, actually I spent some days here, and I felt very upset with my experience here. Not from the devotees. So Krishna is answering. I felt very upset, not from the devotees, not from the deities, but the way we had kept where Krishna was staying. The temple was in a bad shape. And then I was thinking, because, you know, my major focus is, you know, academic preaching. And I mean, like when I was there last time, myself and Hima, we went to see some leadership professors at University of Pretoria, School of Leadership, Management School. And I met also, I went to sleep with the director for the African Institute of African Institute of Leadership Development, and the Council for Social and Industrial Research, Plain Pretoria. And we gave them Bhagavad Gita, in fact. So some of you also didn't know the type of Christian we did when we came last year, although I refused to come to this temple, but we did some high profile Christian in Pretoria. Because we met some of the big guys here and gave them books. What Heman did was just to separate my biodata out of these professors, and they demanded we want to see this guy. You know that he wanted to plead with them that, oh, we have a leader here, please, he wants to come and see you. No, he just separated my biodata out of them, and then they demanded we want to meet this guy. So we went there, and we had a nice chat with them based on global leadership and African leadership. And even I remember the guy had a Council for Social and Industrial Research, he said the relationship should not just end there. Well, he wants us to have some collaboration in the future. Right here, in a place here in Pretoria. So, there's a lot of potential for preaching in this country, just like every other African country, just like every other country in the world. But, you know, sometimes even we go about complaining that, oh, that nothing is working, like I had this type of complaints in America. Even the big leaders and the big gurus, we go about complaining that, you know, preaching is so difficult, nothing is working. But I would say people should not make that type of generalization, because if we say we don't have the skills to penetrate, to preach, that's a different thing than generalizing that things are too difficult that, you know, we can't really preach. And if things are so difficult, then we should go back to the beginning. How did Papa start this movement? What did he do to spread this movement? What did he do? He chanted Hare Krishna. He went on one-man's quad Harinam. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada went on one-man's quad Harinam. And he brought back from the far several devotees. So we tend to do very many sophisticated things. You know, we try to develop high-tech preaching schemes and all these other things. And we tend to minimize. We don't go back to the beginning. And so when we don't go back to the beginning, then we tend to, you know, not align. It becomes like a misalignment with the objectives of the founder Acharya. You know, if you're in an organization, or you're working in a firm, you're working in the company, if it is in, you know, you have 3 PhDs or 5 PhDs and you're employed, you have to work in alignment with the set down goals of that company. The CEO, the founder of that company, has a certain vision. You may be very innovative, but you have to work in line with the set down norms. Then you'll be able to establish yourself properly as a potential reformer or innovator or whatever. But being innovative itself is not a bad thing. And innovation itself is very much welcome in our society. But the problem is how to manage the innovations, how to manage the innovations that have been generated. That is the problem. And therefore, we have to understand that that's a set down tradition given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And if we don't align ourselves or we don't follow the basic norms of the institution, we will be carried away. We will be swayed from the path, from the objectives of the founder. And in that way, we will not achieve the desired success or the desired goal. And just like in this verse, Krishna is letting us understand, giving us assurance that if we follow the set down principles given to us by Prabhupada, will anybody whether they are a child is someone under 18. Anybody who's under 18 years is considered a child on this planet. I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about South Africa, I'm talking about on this planet. Anyone who is under 18 years is considered what? A child. And once you're above 18 years, you're considered not a child, or young adult. In America, when you're 18, parents wash their hands. They don't try to control you. You have a right to sue them to court. You have a right to call the police. You have a right to do anything. If they try to become an impediment on your part of social life, or whatever life. I was just telling Patrick how I was in California, I think 2005. And the one devotee son invited me, or one devotee's brother invited me to come. And he had a daughter who is in secondary school, in high school. She's a child, under 18 years. Under 18. She's in a boarding room. So she came back from the school on holidays, and then she would sleep until like, 7:30 or whatever, or 8 o'clock even some days. So the father, he got really fed up. So he went to knock on our door one morning, and then the girl came out and said, "Daddy, what's the problem?" And he said that, "I know that you're on holidays, but, it's good that you prepare for your next 10 academic work, and besides, you need to help to do some things in the home." And, the girl responded, and this is even under 18, she's still a child. Okay, so if you're under 18, the parents can control you. But even that, there's a limit you can do. So this girl, what she told the father? She said, "Oh, Dad, don't knock on my door next time." That's the father's house. The father's house, she said, "Don't knock on my door next time, and if you try to do it again, I'm going to call the police." So, the point we're bringing out is that we have independence. But as children, we are also under the surveillance or the auspices of our parents. And the parents leave us reckless, then the parents are to blame when we get bad. Similarly, the spiritual master is responsible for the disciple. And the spiritual master has to pilot the disciple, show him or her the way to Krishna Loka. What is the process? Is what basically we were given, the opportunity we were given, is that we got initiated and we got a chance to be able to connect with Krishna. And what is the connection? The spiritual master gives us the telephone number of Krishna. He gives us the telephone number. He gives us the telephone number of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Take the telephone number, dial the Lord every day, and cry to him that the tired of seeing this material world. Let him pick you up from this suffering. Let him bring you back home there. That you are wanting some service to perform for him, and you are not asking for money. He said, "Please, engage me in your service. I'm tired of suffering this material world." So this person wants to, that's what it does. It gives us this cell number, not even home number or office number, cell number or the Supreme Personality of God. People don't give cell numbers to people. They give you office numbers. You meet someone for the first time, gives you his office card. You don't find his cell phone number. I don't know what the situation is, I know what goes on in America. They don't give you cell phone number. That's confidential. And here the spiritual master gives us the cell number of Lord Krishna. So dial it. The best period to really have a chance to speak with him is during the Brahma Muhurta period. It has all the time, when we can catch up with him. So the idea is that we follow that, except we don't really want to meet the person. If we have an important appointment, we want to find out what is the best time to meet this person. from the best time. And if we ask someone who is close to him, he will tell us the time. If he visits the office, but in most cases, if you really want to discuss some real personal confidential matter, it's best to meet him at home, not in the office. If it's an official team, it's office. But here, you know, we are told this is a very interpersonal dialogue. You better meet him at home, and the best time to meet him is between 4:30 and 6:30. Best time to really catch up with him, and that time he's relaxed and he's ready to receive visitors. So basically this verse is letting us understand how important it is to keep to this time frame. It is, you know, like 2 hours out of the 24 hours. So we are given 2 hours. That is the best time. It's a meta cognitive time frame, but it is very important. And so the person who is desiring to meet this significant other will adjust himself outside to be able to catch up with that time frame. Because they say, if you eat a fish, you edit fish yourself, and you have to go to the toilet, even the person who loves you most, even your wife or your beloved husband, won't do it for you. You have to do it yourself. You have to go to the restroom yourself. So the meeting of this person, you can't delegate someone to go and meet him for you, because it is a personal thought. I remember I was in Nigeria, and I had one of my cousins, a small boy, he was born when I left there. And then he had some difficulties because, you know, his mother died, and then the government, his mother is a teacher, and so, you know, the government paid so much money, I think about over 2 million naira. And then the father didn't touch any of the money, he just gave it to the senior son. All right, use this money, put some fixed deposit so that it accrues some interest. With the mind that, you know, this boy is finishing his legal studies, we have to go to law school, it requires so much money, so that from here, from the benefits of this fixed deposit, we'll be able to get something done. So, but then the boy, you know, he acted according to his own whims. He used the money to go and build a house based on destruction from one of his maternal uncles. He couldn't even listen to his father. But then he was complaining, and I said, so I can help him out, I want to go meet one of my cousins who is a justice. And I met that guy. He likes me so much, he's very favorable. I met him and explained that boy's problem to him, because we met the chief justice one day, and then he got to hear about it. So when I went to meet him, then he was asking me that, so I had him to meet the chief justice. Did you tell him that I'm your cousin? He's a judge, okay? So he wants that, okay, if the chief justice, you met the chief justice, this is a big, she's a lady. And so he wanted that at least the lady, the chief justice, should recognize that the person you meet is my cousin. So he asked me, so I said, no, I mean, we actually went there purely an official business, so I didn't have the time to do that. But at the point I'm bringing up is that I met this guy, spoke to him about that, my cousin's problem, and young boy's problem, that he has to go to law school and this is the problem he's facing. But he said, you know, he's a big guy, okay? So he has no time to meet that boy. He said, he can't meet that boy. That whatever arrangement, I should arrange with him, and he will support the boy through me, that he cannot meet that boy. So, the patient is not giving me this condition that someone is a small boy. You understand the point? He's not saying, this one is a small boy, no, I can't meet him. He's saying, the patient is mentioning here, anybody, anyone, who just remembers him at the end of this life. It's not discriminating because, oh, I'm a big guy, so this is a small boy, or this is a woman, or this is an old man. No. I mean people of, you know, my caliber only. It's not giving up any condition. The only condition is that we've been told by the spiritual master, because he's very intimate with Krishna. He knows what is the best time. He knows what time Krishna sleeps. He knows what time he wakes up. You know what time Krishna has his meal. So he gives us a clue. The best time to meet him is during the Brahma Muhurta period. So how many of us call Krishna on the phone during the Brahma Muhurta period? I call Krishna daily during the Brahma Muhurta period. Yes, one hand I'm saying, two hands. Any other hand? Three hands. Four. So, I know some of you must have been calling him, but you know, you don't want to show. But the point is that we have a clue what is the best time to call Krishna on the phone, and because the cell phone is right by him, either it's in his pocket or he tucked it in or behind his dhoti, and like, you know, he tucks his flute. So the spiritual master, because it's very intimate with Krishna, so he gave us the clue how, what is the best time to call him, and he will, that time he will be relaxed, he will be able to give us his attention. You know, you call someone, or you want to speak to someone, and you don't know the best time to speak with him, you can call him now, and it happens. Sometimes I go on the internet, and I just, this devotee is pinning me down, and I just, because most of the time I have to do some research or writing or whatever. And so I just said, please, I'm very busy now. Maybe we'll chat later. So you have to know what time the person is free. And the Guru gives us the time when Krishna is free to call him and speak with him. If we miss that time and we try to reach the person, he might be busy, he might be in a meeting. I remember when I was a child, you go to someone's office and then they say, oh, CEO or director is in the meeting. After that, he means a crowd of people and then they're in the conference hall and they're having some meeting there. But it's just one person with him. And they say it's in a meeting. And it's a meeting, really, because two people make the meeting. So if we don't meet the person, if we don't meet Krishna, if we don't call Krishna at the right time, we can call at the time that's in the meeting and he will not give us, you know, the desired attention. Or the phone may be having engaged too. Sometimes it happens. And Krishna's phone has no voice message facility. So we have to see, if we are serious, we have to follow the instruction given by Krishna himself here, that essentially all of our devotional activities is to be able to remember. We are practicing, all that we are practicing here, it boils down to smarta vyat, satatam vishnu, vishmata vyat, na jatushi. Smarta, always to remember Vishnu and never to forget it. Or always to remember Krishna and never to forget it. That is the essence of our devotional service. Why? Because we will be tested at the time of death based on this. How well we have practiced this to be able to remember what we have been doing every day. Something we do every day, part of our life, it becomes dominant in our consciousness. Anything we do on daily basis without missing, it becomes dominant in our consciousness. In fact, the person you love most, that is the person you remember when there is danger. I know, I was brought up in some African village, and I used to even see, I noticed that very well. I said, my mother, she doesn't call my father's name when she's in danger. She calls her uncle's name. Yeah, I was very observant of the child, I saw that. If she's in danger, she shouts on her uncle's name, not my father's name.
Because I was expecting that they were living together from childhood until she got married. So the impression the child has at pre-puberty makes a very serious impression, impact on the consciousness for a whole lifetime. That's why whatever the child is exposed to, even during pregnancy, matters. I was mentioning this story. How I was in one women's conference in New York, and that was 2007. And there was this Caucasian professor, one lady, after I did my presentation, and so she came to me, and we had some dialogue. And so she was telling me some things that I found it very difficult to accept. One of those things, a New Yorker, a middle class lady, just over 30, and she's a dean of the faculty, a professor, and she told me in her house, no one watches TV or CNN. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? In New York, a New York professor, that's what she told me. And she, you know, she really diagnostically explored all of what she was saying before I was able to, you know, chew it and digest it. She said she has two daughters. We had discussed other political things before she came to this. She started telling me about her domestic affairs. She said she has two daughters. And sometimes the older girl agitates the norms in the home. But as a professor, she will sit her down and explain to her the psychology of the home and the psychology of the TV. And again, because she gets bombarded by peers at school. But then when the mother speaks to her, she comes back to her senses and calms down. And one of the basic things that endeared me most in that discussion is that this woman is not a Vaishnava. She's not what? A Vaishnavi. Yet she has such a disciplined life. She knows that if the children are exposed to the TV, with the pornography, with the violence, etc., that the child will imbibe that culture, and at some point in time, the child will begin to, you know, invoke or evoke that from within. Without the practice, that you see some children, they watch all of these movies, and then, you know, when nobody's there, then they practice it among themselves. You know? That's how it works. Therefore, we see that some people, that they might not be coming to our temple, they might not be our devotees. But again, it behooves us to be able to encourage people, or whatever level they may be, to come to a platform where they could appreciate the teachings of Srila Prabhupada or Krishna consciousness. Because some people have a lot of pious credit from their pious background. And, you know, we have a general tendency of thinking that, of assuming a superiority complex because, you know, we are vegetarians and then we are following, you know, rigid, you know, four-legged principles. And, you know, we worship every day. So we are better than everyone else. And anybody who is not actually worshipping with us, or doesn't come to our temples, or is not a vegetarian, I mean, it's actually a very sinful person, right? But it shouldn't be like that. We should actually be sympathetic with people. See, what we are doing, we are cultivating how to remember Krishna. Krishna smiling. We are doing it, it looks very easy for us because we have been doing it, and we have achieved the process of doing it. We have covered them with it. It's like someone who is drinking water,
water is no luxury. He has water in his house, water is not a luxury. At the same time, anything that we don't have is a luxury. If someone doesn't have a limousine or say the latest Mercedes, you may be thinking, oh, how I wish I should have that. And you're thinking, there's a vacuum in my life because I don't have that. And I can't really measure with my mates, with my friends, like this. But once you have that, it becomes nothing. You're looking for something else, isn't it? That's it. So, people who are not part of the Christian consciousness, they look at us as highly elevated people. Because honestly speaking, even just to give up meat eating, not to talk of to come and be chanting Krishna's name, even to just give up meat eating is a big problem to some people. Or to give up intoxication is a big problem. These are the things that people enjoy generally. Because enjoyment is also in the mind. And then the devotees are chanting Krishna's name, and then they think that they've been washed. These people have been brainwashed, and instead of using their life meaningfully, they just, you know, they're worshiping. I mean, someone was asking me, why do we need to worship in ISKCON? Why do we need to worship Prabhupada more than even Krishna? And this was in India. So, my explanation is that, yes, there could be some logical presentation to that, but let's talk about Shastra. What does the Shastra say? In the Uddhava Gita, Lord Krishna told Uddhava that the worship of my devotee is more important than my worship. In the Adi Purana, Lord Krishna told Arjuna that those who say they are my devotees, they are not. That those who are actually my devotees are those who are devoted to my devotee. Lord Shiva also mentioned to Parvati that of all worships, the worship of Vishnu is the highest. But even higher than the worship of Vishnu is the Vishnu Tadiya. That means the pure devotee of the Lord. So, I use this point to this young inquirer, and the inquirer was very satisfied. Because sometimes also people do not know why we do certain things, how we do certain things, and they just do certain things, and then we're thinking that, you know, this is dogma. But there is evidence there based on Sanskrit. Like you go to the law court, and you say one thing, you have to adduce evidence from the criminal code, from the criminal procedure act, from the road traffic edits, if it is a road traffic matter. So you don't just go and tell the judge, now, on the basis of my understanding, this shouldn't be the case. Where is the evidence? So the question is, where is the evidence that we have, why must we chant Krishna's name? This is what Krishna is mentioning here. We chant his name, it's a practice, it's sadhana, we are sadhakas. This is sadhana bhakti. It's required that we chant Krishna's name. Even according to Pramana, it gives 9 processes of devotional service. And the emphatic one is Vishnu Smaran. To remember somebody requires some invocation of love. You just try this. Call somebody up on the phone, and when you finish discussion, what is the last thing the person normally will say? Yes, tell us. What time did you call somebody last on the phone? Not your wife, I mean somebody else. What?
Goodbye.
See you again. Can somebody else give us some idea about, you know, what normally happens at the end of the dialogue, at the end of the discussion on the telephone? Yes, the matter is, tell us. Can someone tell us?
Love you.
Huh?
They love you.
Yes. And another point, that these are all correct statements. It happens, people make these comments. Yes, I did. Not your husband, I mean, like some other, your friends, colleagues, or whatever, when you call them, or family members, when you call them, not when they call you, when you call them, one is your normal observation about what they say at the end of the conversation. Well, before you hang up, what did they say? Yes.
Thank you for calling.
They show appreciation. Thank you for calling. This is one of the things I observe when you call somebody. They appreciate it. Why they say that? Why? Because they feel, for you to have remembered me, this is impressive. So, this is one way to build relationships in a community like ours. Sometimes we complain about our situation more than anyone else, but there are simple ways to be able to build up relationships in the Vaishnava community. Just by calling someone up on the phone, asking about his or her family, it makes a very big meaning in people's lives. And I observe it. I know some professors, one of my friends, long time, we have not met, and I just called them on the phone. And they say, thank you for remembering me. They say, thank you for remembering me. Thank you for remembering me. People value it. And so here, we are remembering Krishna every day. This is the point. You think Krishna is not going to be appreciative? That's why Krishna is saying that anybody who simply takes to this path of devotional service, practices this Vishnu Smarana, chanting, remembering of Krishna's name, at the end of life, he will remember him. And Krishna assures us, it's a shakti, it's a guarantee that he will come back to his abode. Krishna is not just bluffing. Don't bluff us. He's giving us an assurance. That is to stabilize our faith in Krishna consciousness that what we are doing, we are treading on the right path, and this is the ultimate goal. So if we are coming to the temple, or we've been around this society for 20 years, 30 years, we should also see how best we are remembering Krishna every day, because that will contribute a lot to our passing examination at the end of this body. We will sit an exam, and that exam is called death. We'll be tested how well we'll be practicing to remember Krishna's name. Just like I mentioned, if we are doing that every day, at the time of death, that is what is going to flood our consciousness, remembrance of Lord Krishna. And we've been guaranteed here, Krishna will take us to his eternal abode. And it doesn't mean that, he didn't say, the sannyasis will remember me at the time of death. He didn't say so. He says, anyone. He says, anybody. He didn't say, the man, the husband, the owners of the house will remember me at the time of death. He said, anybody. I remember just a few days back, so I had a thread of discussion on my Facebook. And so one devotee from India, he wanted to post something on what Bhagavad Prabhupada was talking. And then because of my type of preaching and my background, different people on my Facebook, some people who are not even devotees, completely, they don't know anything about devotional service. And so one of these ladies, she lives in Alaska with her husband. She's also schooling. And then she got infuriated because the boy posted something that tends to demean women, that women are ignorant or something like that. So she really got infuriated, you know?
And then he cheated. The person who posted that did not even follow the thread of the posting. He just bought something because Papa said. And scholars are very cautious about that. Okay, I'm talking about amoeba. And then you bring something about Thyrogyra. And you're off track. No matter how well articulated that presentation may be. The guy talking about amoeba, you brought some quote about Thyrogyra. It's not in alignment with what's been said. So that was actually how the woman took offense, and we took time to really placate her. And then eventually, she wrote me to say that she's sorry if she was rude or whatever. But then I said, no, that's no problem. I mean, you're just expressing yourself. I understand what you're saying. So the point is, we have a process, and we have to follow that process without just jumping to bring something else. You know, we think that is going to, you know, bootstrap the whole process. But the process may be that simple. We should follow that simple methodology, and we will be able to achieve the ultimate result. And if we think that there's a better thing to do that other than chanting Krishna's name, and if you chant Krishna's name, basically we also ask Krishna to engage us. And so it would be ironical if we have Krishna to engage us and there's some engagement and we just say, I'm busy. I can't do it because, you know, I'm very busy. And therefore we have to understand that we are very lucky. This boat, Krishna consciousness, or this airplane, Krishna consciousness, all of us are in it. And if we simply remember Krishna every day, who will be able to achieve the ultimate destination? And it does not really require so much of pravacha, you know, preaching or talking. Nayam atma pravacha nena lakde na medaya na bahu na nasutena. It doesn't really, attending Krishna consciousness does not really depend on, you know, too much of Sanskrit work or too much of, you know, reading. We have to read to be able to have faith. But, you know, if we read and then we don't chant, then there's an imbalance. Or we do service and we don't chant, again there's an imbalance. Or we preach very nicely and we don't chant, again there is an imbalance. So we have to balance it. We have to do all the things at the same time. Not that we do one thing and we neglect the other. We do the service, but we also have to chant everything. And look, there are 24 hours of the day. How many hours do you use for sleeping? Huh? In Delhi, some woman, one lady, you know, dragged me to her home. And said, her son, finished from the university, he's working, and he's married, he's living there, the home with his wife and the kid. So I asked this guy, so your mother is a very serious devotee. You are chanting, sitting around every day? He said, no, he doesn't chant. He told me that he still smokes. And then that's the bad thing, that you can be chanting if you're in your smoke. So he told me why he doesn't want to chant. And it's a good logical reason why he doesn't want to chant. And guess why? He said he doesn't want to become a full-time devotee, and if he chants, he may give up everything. Which is a very good reason. I told him that there are many people who are chanting and they don't give up their jobs. They don't give up you have a wife and child, so nobody's going to encourage you to do that because we have to protect the women and the children and we have vows on them. So I said, you know, but for the love of your mother, if you love your mother, you like your mother, I mean, you should try to do the things that will be pleasing to her. So I said, look, your mother dragged me to your house today. I didn't know her before. She just saw me in the Delhi temple and then I don't know what motivated her. Then she kept pushing that I had to come. So I can't, but actually I didn't come for your mother. It's you. Krishna sent me to you. So let's discuss, and then I must make sure that you have to chant before I leave this house. And so we had a long dialogue discussion, but eventually he promised that, you know, he brought all of his arguments, his reasons why, his excuses, and I trashed all the excuses. And then later he actually he resonated with the idea that, you know, there was a need for him to chant, because the mother is a very serious devotee, and he actually follows what the mother is doing, then it would be good for her, for him, for his child, and for his wife. So these are some of the things I raised with him, that he stands to benefit, and if you don't have that apprehension that, you know, he's going to leave his work and all this and become a full-time priest. So there are many people who are not full-time priests, so why are you worried about that? So the point is, sometimes we may have some excuses why we wouldn't chant. Or sometimes we are chanting and we wonder why we are not making so much progress. Because we are doing the right thing at the wrong time. Most cases we are doing the right thing at the wrong time. At the time that the most of nature become too heavy, then we struggle to chant. It will not give us the maximum benefit. The maximum result will not be there. And so it's like when you have been given some prescription by a physician, take this medicine before meal. Take this medicine at bedtime. If you take the medicine before meal in the afternoon when you finish lunch, it means that you are not following the prescribed procedure to take that medication. Medication is effective, but it will not give you the desired result because you're taking it at inappropriate time. So, calling Krishna also, that's a schedule. Krishna has a schedule. That's the time he goes to sleep, time he goes to take a shower, time that mother is feeding him, time he goes out to the forest to play with the cowherd boys and to tend to the cows. So if you call him at the time that he's busy, how is he going to, he has intimate relationship with his friends. You just tell me. The first time you got married to your spouse, I think those first week or something like that is honeymoon, and it's just an intense relationship. Everybody keeps the phone aside, isn't it? Attention is for the spouse. Can you imagine you just got married and you've been hankering to have a husband or hankering to have a devoted wife? And Krishna has blessed you with one, and the first week you got married, first day you wedded, and then you pick up the phone and then you're speaking with some friend. Oh my good God. How will the spouse think? I think, what's wrong with this person? I remember one of my grandfathers, when he got newly married, and so we used to talk on the phone very frequently. And when he got married, his life completely changed. And then he said, I call on the phone, if the wife is there, he said, I'll call you back later. Because he doesn't want to distract the girl's attention, you know, which is very natural. Imagine if you're with your new wedded girl, and then you're busy on the phone with somebody else, it just shows that you don't love this person. It's as simple as that. A woman needs your quality time. A woman needs a quality time, not how many billions of dollars you give to the woman. Your time, quality time, very important. Is it not true, Mataji? You know, like the other day, I remember in one of these African temples, so I was giving a class and I was raising some issues about the brahmacharis, you know, being, you know, putting their body naked, you know, open body, and we know there is a lot of, you know, heat. So then I was asking them, how would you feel if the female devotees also keep their bodies open? So then, you know, I asked the messages. So when the men keep their bodies open, do they generate any attraction? They said, yes. Yes. So, I mean, we have to be practical, you know. Sometimes we take the rati, it's only on one side, it's on both sides. Just like a man is attracted to a girl is attracted to a man. And it's all about, you know, body workshop. And so, what is good for the goose is good for the gander. Whatever we deem most appropriate for our spiritual advancement, we should also pray for that for other people. And Krishna would love to see us praying for each other, and then he comes to the rescue, even in our own very difficult situations. Like the father or the mother It's the parents are just after the child. They sacrifice all of their pleasures for the child. So if some parents will even prefer, their child is ill, they'll prefer that, please, death, take me instead of my child. A parent who loves the child, this is their mentality. If the parents, our material parents, they love us so much, what about the supreme parent, Krishna? Therefore, Krishna has opened up his doors. He wants us to come back. And there's a process of coming back. Even in the dog, if you're in an airplane, you're landed, the doors of the plane are open. You will have to get up from your seat to walk out. The plane has brought you to your destination. You will unbuckle your seatbelt. You have got up. You walk out of the plane to your destination. So the doors are open for us. The plane has landed. We have to walk out. And the process is there. Just to remember Krishna. Krishna does everything else for us without any rigors. So we should practice to remember Krishna. And when we are chanting Krishna's name, we remember Krishna, we should understand this is the most lovable object. Just like the things we will not do when we are with a newly wedded spouse, we should not do those things when we are chanting Krishna's names. We should not give attention to anyone else when we are with our most beloved spouse. Especially, those who are not married, they should hear this. Especially just after the wedding. So, here we are practicing how to attain Krishna consciousness. And this is the process. I've seen people chanting Hare Krishna and they're watching movie. I've seen it. This is not Purana, I've seen it. But it's like someone, you know, who is talking to somebody he loves and is not giving attention, you know. So I think that they organize all these Japa workshops also here in America. It's a big thing that even elderly people of 80 something years, they will fly to very long distant places to be able to attend a Japa workshop. Those things are very helpful. Because sometimes we think we have been in the movement for 20 years, 30 years, and we know everything, we can chant, but, you know, see, we are not able to control our senses, so we have to see how we are always improving in how to perform this Krishna smara. Krishna has given us a guarantee here that this will help us to attain this lotus feet. Hare Krishna. Are there some comments or some questions on this point? Some questions or comments? I guess all of you here know my name. I'm sure. You sure? You don't know? Okay. Is there anybody who has not seen me before? Is there anybody here who has not seen me before? Or you? You? Oh, really? I see some people. My name is Bhakti Vasudev Swami. I was originally born in Nigeria, but over the years I've been in the United States. My main focus in the Prabhupada mission has been in academic preaching. So I run programs in academy. I go to conferences, present papers at academic conferences, publish in academic journals. From the Vaishnava philosophical perspectives, providing solutions to social, political, economic, domestic, whatever issues. So, I think I was here last year, when I was here in June, and then I came to Durban during the Ratha Yatra, and then I was in the Lineage Temple before I left for West Africa. So I'm on my way back to the U.S., and I just stopped over to be able to, you know, get the association and then to beg for your mercy so that I could try to be a devotee in this life. So I need a blessing. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, can you read it out?
Question number one. Sometimes during the 8 hours in the morning, I feel sleepy when chanting Krishna's name and may chant inattentively.
Mm-hmm.
And thus cause offenses. What practical tips can you give to overcome this?
Yeah. I had somebody, you know, one of the girls in one of the temples, you know, she was telling me that, you know, her mentor, her teacher, told her that, you know, to chant, to move, to chant and be moving, that's chanting the mode of passion. So I said that the Papa often will be chanting in his room and be pacing. So you mean Papa was chanting the mode of passion?
Mm-hmm.
Papa was not chanting the mode of passion. You see, when we get weak, we should get up and walk. And essentially, what we do need is to be able to be attentive to our chanting. Our slogan is, there are no hard and fast rules. And so if I sit down and I'm getting weak, like, okay, but I slept for 4.5 hours last night, and I chanted for one, I sat down chanting for 1 hour, and I was getting weak, so I got up, and then I had to pace in the room, walk back and forth, until I chanted the remaining 1 hour, and then I had to get to the table to do my work. So, if we're feeling that the body is weak, then we should do something that will really, you know, keep us alive. The best way is to do, you know, to walk, either in the temple, and then anywhere you go in our temples, there's provisions for that. People walk around the Tulsi, in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, anywhere you go, provisions for that. So, and that's one way to be able to deal with all these other things. The important thing is the mindset. We have to be able to understand whom we are communicating with and give rapt attention to Krishna. And if we do that, despite if even we're in a bus or in a public place or whatever, we will focus on Krishna. Krishna is in the heart. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, read the Juna Sistati. Sarvatya Saham, read it. It's an industry. He's in the heart of each and every one of us. So he knows, you know, the challenges we are passing through. And if we try to align ourselves with his Ladini Shakti, his devotional service, by chanting his names with attention, it doesn't matter whether we are standing or we are sitting down. Krishna will actually reciprocate. You don't need to just do any position you are. You can stand anyhow and talk to your beloved, isn't it? Yeah. So we should take cognizance of that anywhere we can all the time. But ideally people like to sit down because, you know, that keeps your body straight and it gives you better concentration. But if your body is becoming weak, you're feeling sleepy, you can get up and walk.
Last question, Maharaj. Please inform me of who wrote the Vedas. How did it eventually come to us?
Oh, Bhagavad Gita, for instance, was spoken to Arjuna, and Krishna told Arjuna that I spoke this knowledge to Vivisvan, the sun god, millions of years ago. Arjuna was bewildered. He thought within himself, he was reflecting, he was having internal dialogue. And in fact, he spoke out. He said, what do you mean? Sun god, this is his age, and you and me, come on. We are cousins. And Krishna explained to him that, you know, you were also there when I spoke to the sun god. You don't remember. I remember everything because I don't change my body. I don't change my body. You change your body. Each time we change our body, you know, we forget about everything that we had experienced in the past life. So the knowledge is actually coming, the Vedic knowledge is coming from Krishna himself. It was spoken first in this universe to Lord Brahma, and then Brahma passed it down through the disciplic succession to our present day system. And the process is that of oral, the process has been that of oral reception. However, with the progression of the Kali Yuga, you know, we have to use tape recorders, audio visuals and so many other things to be able to retain this knowledge. So even right now we have Veda days, you can carry the whole of the Veda, Veda in your palm, you know. Nowadays even they made some
iPod that you can put all of those database inside and several other things inside. It could be that, you know, you're just standing somewhere, but, you know, you have all the verdicts that are right in you, and, you know. So that is the glory of the information technological age. So the Vedic literature or the Vedic knowledge is coming to us through the parampara from Lord Krishna himself, first to Lord Brahma, and then Brahma, Narada, like that, coming down. And even the Bhagavad Gita was spoken again to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra over 5,000 years ago. So then we can appreciate what we are doing now. Nasta prayesu abhadresu nityam bhagavata seve. Bhagavati Uttama Sloka Bhakti Bhavayat Naisik. So, the process, you see, sometimes we wonder, this is all rituals. You're coming to temple every Sunday, or coming to class every morning, a Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class, even this is all ritualistic. But there's a reason for it. The Bhagavatam says that by attending, having oral reception of this Vedic vibration, this Vedic literature, one becomes purified, nasta prayesu, abhadra, all the bad things, impurities of the heart, they become cleansed by hearing these transcendental vibrations of the Vedic literature. And to be able to expedite the purification, Prabhupada has given us a systematic way of being able to spend our daily 24 hours. And we have just have to give 2 hours to this most important process of